Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
This is Danielle Fischel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is Danielle Fischel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Walk the dog, scrawled in handwriting across the top of a 6-page letter, hidden inside a LSAT prep book in Corey Richens' jail cell. Deputies found it while Corey was being treated for a medical episode. Inside, detailed instructions for her mother, Lisa Darden, to coach her brother on what to say if he testified. Have him tell the court Eric got drugs from Mexico, that Eric was an addict, that his death was an accidental overdose. Specific talking points, specific narrative, specific scripts for another human being to deliver under oath. When prosecutors flagged it as witness tampering, Corey didn't deny writing it. Instead, on a recorded jail call with her mother, she said, "Those papers were not a letter to you guys. They were part of a freaking book. I was writing this fictional mystery book about her fictional stay in a Mexican prison." She asked her attorney to smuggle in Crest white strips because her teeth were getting yellow from all the coffee they drink in the Mexican prison. That explanation is more revealing than the letter itself. And this is where we leave the room's metaphor behind. Because what's happening here isn't compartmentalization anymore. It is something faster. More automatic, more biological. This is a reflex. And when you see it for what it is, the rest of her post-arrest behavior stops being confusing and starts being a roadmap to how her brain is miswired. Watch what happens when she gets caught. She doesn't go silent, doesn't invoke her rights, doesn't simply deny. She generates a story instantly. Under pressure, on a recorded line, she presumably knew was being monitored. Not a pause, not a stumble, a complete narrative. Fictional novel, Mexican prison, Crest White strips, produced in real time like antibodies responding to an infection. The threat enters the system produces a defense automatically, without conscious deliberation, the way you flinch before you decide to flinch. That's the psychology of what's happening in this jail cell. Not strategy, not planning, reflex. And understanding the difference is essential because strategy can be abandoned when it stops working. A reflex can't. It fires whether it helps or not. It fires when it makes things worse. It fires because that's what it does. The letter wasn't the first boundary she crossed from behind bars. Before deputies found it, she read another inmate's letter aloud to her mother over a recorded phone line. She held up multi-page documents on video calls so her mother could read or photograph them through the screen. Each one a jail rules violation. Each one reckless. Each one done anyway because the compulsion to maintain the narrative overrides the calculation of risk. The system that says, I need to control this story is louder than the system that says this call is being recorded. And that hierarchy, story over survival, tells you everything. For most people, self-preservation beats narrative. You stop talking when the lawyer tells you to stop talking. You follow jail rules because violating them makes your situation worse. The cost benefit is obvious, but for someone whose identity is the narrative, protecting the story isn't separate from self-preservation. It is self-preservation. The story is the self. Lose the story, and there is no self left to preserve. Think about what it means to violate jail communication rules when facing an aggravated murder charge. The stakes could not be higher. Every misstep, every rule broken, every recorded call where something incriminating slips out, all of it feeds directly into the prosecution's case. A rational actor, someone driven by strategy rather than compulsion, would be the most careful communicator in the facility. They'd say nothing that wasn't vetted by their attorney. They'd follow every rule to the letter because the cost of violating them is measured in years of their life. Corey did the opposite. She violated communication protocols repeatedly on recorded lines, aware they were recorded. That's not recklessness. That's a compulsion that overrides rational calculation that needs to produce and distribute narrative. A narrative that she believes is stronger than the need to avoid incriminating herself. Stronger than the need to stay out of deeper trouble. Stronger than anything. So the machine runs from a jail cell on monitored lines through smuggled letters. It runs because it has to, not because she chose to keep running it the way you'd choose to keep fighting a legal case, because it doesn't have an off switch. The threat exposure, loss of narrative control, the collapse of the constructed identity triggers the response. The response is produce a story, always, at any cost, from anywhere. The fictional novel, that whole defense deserves its own beat because it's the reflex caught in slow motion. She's been found out. The letter is in the prosecution's hand. The call is on tape. And the explanation she produces is, I'm a published author. Authors write fiction. This was fiction. She doesn't even hesitate. She integrates the new problem into her existing self-narrative without any visible cognitive dissonance. Of course she's writing a novel. She wrote a whole book already, right? Children's book, ghostwritten. Why wouldn't she be working on another one? The logic flows in her head. The story holds, at least in the room where she's telling it. And it was generated in seconds, not rehearsed, manufactured on contact with the threat. The way a bruise forms on contact with a table edge. Not planned, just produced. Her attorney, Sky Lazzaro, withdrew from the case after her firm reported an ethical issue. The specifics remain sealed, but the pattern of conflict with legal representation fits perfectly. A client who cannot accept being managed, who views the attorney not as an expert, but as a tool to be directed. The attorney says, you cannot orchestrate testimony. Let me handle strategy. And the client hears, you're shutting down my ability to control the story. Not a disagreement about strategy, an existential threat. And the reflex fires again. Push back, resist, find another way. Because stopping means silence, and silence means the story stops. And if the story stops, the self, the broken brain of Corey Richens, collapses. Think about that math. The math of that attorney conflict. Corey is facing aggravated murder charges that could result in life without parole. She's been in jail for months. Her defense attorney, the person standing between her and that sentence, walks away. An ethical issue is so severe that a firm willingly gives up a high-profile murder case rather than continue the representation. Most defendants would be terrified. Most defendants would adjust. But the psychological architecture we're describing doesn't process consequences the way most people do. The attorney leaving isn't a warning to change behavior. It's another person who failed to understand the mission. Another member of the team that didn't get it. The reflex absorbs the loss and moves on to the next attorney, the next letter, the next story. The machine doesn't grieve its broken parts. It just replaces them. The letter also contains something that went beyond the witness tampering. Corey wrote that Eric's sisters have always been jealous of me because anything they could do, Corey could do better. Being a mom, college, stay-at-home wife until she built a $1 million company. The prosecution is jealousy. Eric's family isn't grieving. They're scheming. The judge isn't applying the law. He's biased. Everyone who opposes her does so because of who she is, not what she did. The opposition can't be legitimate. It has to be petty, personal, inferior, another antibody, another defense generated to neutralize a threat. Later in a message to someone, court findings described as an admirer, she wrote, I will expose this county, the prosecution, the judge, the Richens, the investigation. It's not I will fight for my freedom, not I will prove my innocence. I will expose them, the investigators, the prosecutors. The family of the man she was convicted of killing, they are the ones who have done something wrong. They need to be held accountable. She is the victim, and she will bring them to justice. It's not performance. This is what the reflex produces when it runs for 3 straight years without interruption. The story doesn't just defend against each individual threat anymore. It has grown into a complete alternate reality with its own internal logic, its own villains, its own righteous cause. The arrest wasn't justice. It was persecution. The evidence isn't proof. It's fabrication. The family raising her children isn't protecting them. They're stealing them. And every new development that contradicts her reality gets absorbed into the persecution narrative. Making the conspiracy bigger, the injustice deeper, the eventual vindication more glorious. Notice the escalation pattern here. Before the arrest, grieving mother coping with an unexpected loss. After the arrest, innocent woman falsely accused by jealous in-laws and a corrupt system. After the letter was found, misunderstood author whose creative fiction was taken out of context. After the verdict, as we'll see, a woman whose very essence makes the conviction impossible. Each version bigger than the last, each requiring more suspension of disbelief, and each one generated not by conscious strategy, but by the same reflex responding to bigger threats with bigger stories. The way a fever rises to match the severity of the infection. The stories don't even need to be consistent with each other. The fictional novel defense contradicts the innocent widow narrative, which contradicts the jealous in-laws narrative, which contradicts the corrupt system narrative. Each one was produced in response to a specific threat at a specific moment. None of them was designed to fit into a coherent larger framework because the reflex doesn't plan ahead. It doesn't check for continuity. It fires in the moment, generates whatever story neutralizes the immediate threat, and moves on. The wreckage of contradictory narratives left behind is invisible to Corey because she's never standing in two of them at the same time. She's always in the current one. And the current one in Corey's mind is always true. Nearly 3 years in a jail cell before trial. During that time, letters written, calls made, attorneys hired and lost, messages sent to admirers, innocence proclaimed to every person who would listen. The evidence mounted, the charges expanded, the prosecution's case grew stronger, and her conviction in her own innocence by all available evidence never wavered. Not because she was brave, not because she was committed to a strategy, because the reflex doesn't consult the evidence. It doesn't weigh the odds. It fires. Every time, automatically, the way your heart beats without being asked. And that should make your skin crawl, not because she's dangerous. She's behind bars, but because the thing that makes her dangerous isn't a choice. It's not something she can decide to stop doing. It's not something a verdict can reach. The 12 people who convicted her, the judge who sentenced her, the prison that holds her, none of them can touch the mechanism. It's below the level where consequences land, below the level where evidence registers, below the level where other people's pain gets processed. A therapist who specializes in this kind of psychology will tell you that the hardest thing for families to accept isn't the behavior itself. It's the permanence. The realization that this isn't a phase. It's not something that will get better with time or consequences or treatment. The reflex was there before the murder, and it was there during the cover-up. It was there in the jail cell, and it will be there in prison decades from now, generating stories for whoever will listen. That's not a choice she's making. That's who she is. She sat in a courtroom for 3 weeks, silent, watching the prosecution tell a story she could not direct, could not edit, could not interrupt, for someone whose entire psychology runs on narrative production. That silence would be the closest thing to suffocation she has ever experienced. And what that silence looked like from the outside and what it was doing to her on the inside is something else entirely. That's coming up next. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it. We'll continue our conversation in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Until then, my name is Tony Bruschi. Those links, by the way, in the description. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
A juror named Laura went on Good Morning America after the trial of Corey Richens and described her first impression of Corey Richens. Kind of interesting to hear. The first thing we hear is these terrible things about her. This is what Laura, the juror, said. And she's just sitting there, like all by herself. At first, I was thinking that Corey was definitely feeling trapped. First impressions of someone you don't know anything about. By the time the verdict came, guilty on all counts, roughly 3 hours of deliberation, Lori described Corey differently, like a statue. Almost no reaction, even as the judge read the word guilty on charge after charge after charge. The distance between feeling trapped and like a statue is the entire psychological journey of this trial, not the jury's journey, Corey's. And I think this episode is the one that really cracks open how broken her internal system really is. Because for 3 weeks, the thing she relies on most to function was taken away from her. And what was left when you strip away all of that. It tells you everything. The trial started February 23rd, 2026 in Summit County. It was expected to last through late March. It didn't need that long. Both sides rested. The defense called zero witnesses. Corey waived her right to testify. The jury came back unanimous in roughly 3 hours. But what matters for this episode isn't the evidence or the verdict. It's the 3 weeks in between. What it felt like inside the psychology we've been mapping across this entire series. To sit in your chair and watch your constructed reality get dismantled in public, piece by piece, by people you can't redirect, and evidence you can't rewrite, Corey. As we go through part four here in our series, be sure to press subscribe wherever it is you're listening or watching, and then give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. Let's start with the defense strategy, because it's all, it's the first collision point here. Zero witnesses, no defense case for a woman who's spent years constructing and defending an alternative narrative with a children's book, TV appearances, letters from jail, messages to admirers about exposing the system, being told by her own attorneys that the best strategy is to stay, just say nothing, just shut up. Must have landed like a hand around her throat, really. I mean, not silence as a legal tactic, silence as the direct negation of everything her psychology requires to function. It's probably why we got a 40-minute diatribe at the end. It was all bottling up. She's probably taking notes the whole time for that speech. Her attorneys likely concluded that any witness or testimony would just open doors that needed to stay closed. Legally defensible, but consider what that advice sounded like inside Corey's head. The people she hired to tell her story decided her story was a liability. They were not rejecting the prosecution's case. They were, in effect, rejecting hers. And she had to accept it. She had to sit down. She had to stay quiet for 3 weeks. The woman who produced stories the way most people produce breathing reflexively, automatically, under every kind of pressure, was told to stop producing and comply. Imagine what those 3 weeks felt like from inside of Corey Richardson's mind. Not as a legal proceeding, as a sustained psychological event. Day after day, witnesses from her own life took the stand and told a story about her that she could not control, could not correct, could not redirect. Each witness peeled back another layer of the identity she'd built. She had to absorb it in silence in a chair while the room watched. And we saw her reactions to it all. Utter rejection of the opinions of any human being around her that directly conflicted with her own. Shock, outrage, disgust is all we got from Corey the whole trial. Anytime anybody said anything. But the second somebody said, "Oh my God, you make the best chicken stew in a crock pot," oh, Corey lit up like a Christmas tree. A radioactive Christmas tree stolen from a family in Chernobyl. But still a Christmas tree, nonetheless, being plugged into the wrong type of outlet 40-some years after the disaster, missing all of its needles. But still, a one-time a Christmas tree, right? Carmen Lauber, the housekeeper, testified about selling Corey the fentanyl, a woman from Corey's own life, someone she employed, someone she trusted enough to ask for street drugs, sitting across the courtroom and narrating the transaction. For most defendants, that is devastating because of the legal implications themselves. For Corey, the damage is a little different. This is someone from her world stepping outside her narrative and telling a version of events she can't manage. The first crack in the wall of the story, she thought that she controlled. Then Josh Grossman took the stand and wept. The text messages are projected for the courtroom, the private world, the sealed room where she was building her next life, displayed on screens for 12 strangers to read. He described how Corey asked him 2 weeks after Eric's death whether he had ever taken someone's life. He described the trucks she bought him,
the flip houses he lived in, the plans they made for a future that depended on Eric not having one and basically being her indentured servant. Every detail from Grossman's testimony was the interior of a room Corey had kept locked, being opened for public inspection. And she could only watch. She didn't like it. Think about what that feels like from her seat at the defense table. A man she allegedly loved or used or needed or both, becoming emotional about their relationship in front of people who will decide whether she lives in prison forever. His testimony isn't just about an affair. It's about the texture of her deception, the money she spent on him, the questions she asked, the texts where she mapped out a future and required her husband's absence. The most private relationship in her life narrated for strangers while she sat in mandated silence and could not say a single word. The forensic accounting may have been the most psychologically damaging testimony of all, though, because it didn't challenge what Corey did. It challenged who she was. Black and white, numbers, don't lie. There ain't no conjecture here. Brooke Carrington spent an entire day walking the jury through the financial reality behind the projected image. The $4.5 million in debt, the business that was collapsing, the high interest loans, the properties that weren't generating what Corey told people they were generating. For someone whose entire self-concept was built on being the girl who grew up scrubbing rich people's toilets and crawled her way to owning those same houses, having that image revealed as a fiction built on debt, it was not just humiliating, it was annihilating. The person she told the world she was, the person she needed to be for the rest of her psychology to function, was dismantled with spreadsheets in front of everyone. Day after day, witness after witness, friends testifying she'd said things would be better if Eric were dead. The gap between the constructed identity and the documented reality projected on screen side by side, the successful businesswoman crushed by debt, the devoted mother, a woman who chose money and a boyfriend over her family, the grieving widow identified as the person who searched for lethal doses of fentanyl, acquired it from her housekeeper and served it up in a cocktail, and nobody stood up to defend her. That absence has to be understood psychologically, not just legally. The defense called zero witnesses. Nobody from her life took the stand to say she was a good person, that she was incapable of this, that the prosecution had it all wrong. Not her mother, not her sister, not her brother, not a single living soul. The people who would later at sentencing call her glue of the family and promise her that her innocence would shine too brightly to be contained. Some of y'all using ChatGPT too much. None of them testified. Whether that was a legal decision or a practical one, the psychological experience for Corey is pretty much the same. She sat through 3 weeks of dismantled testimony, of being dismantled, of dismantlement. Nobody came to rebuild her. And through all of it, silence, unable to object in her own voice, unable to explain, unable to redirect, unable to produce the one thing her psychology has always relied on to survive, a story. So what does that do to a mind built on narrative production? Well, the reflex we talked about in the last episode, the automatic story generating mechanism that fires under every threat, was being triggered constantly. Every witness was a threat. Every piece of evidence was a threat. Every day in that courtroom was a sustained assault on her self-image. And that reflex, the reflex was firing over and over, generating responses, defenses, explanations, stories. But they had nowhere to go. The attorneys had closed the valve. The stories were being produced but couldn't be released. Corey was pipe bomb waiting to explode. 3 weeks of narrative pressure building behind a closed capsule. The result visible to the courtroom was what that juror described, a statue. Not calm, not stoic, not strategically composed, a system in overload, a circuit breaker, tripped by information too threatening for the self structure to process. The machinery that usually produces charm, emotional display, narrative construction, offline. Not because she'd accepted what was happening, because the system had no program for this scenario. She'd never been in a room where she couldn't control the story and couldn't leave. And the only response the system could produce was nothing. Freeze. Go still. Wait for it to stop. Then came her Google searches projected on the screen, misspelled, typo-written, raw. What is a lethal dot dose dot ofet dot fentanyl? If someone is poisoned, what does it go down on the death certificate as? The simplicity is really kind of stunning. Well, they were poisoned, Bill, so on the death certificate, we got to put down it was a toxic combo of no-no juice and curry sauce. The hell do you think it goes down on the death certificate as, you idiot? Luxury prisons for the rich in America, another fine search. These searches were the one room she never showed anyone. The planning room, the awareness room, the room that contradicted every other version of herself. And now 12 strangers were reading its contents out loud, word by misspelled word, while she sat in a chair and could not speak. The typos deserve a little attention, not as evidence, but I think almost as psychology. Fentanyl, period. Poisoned, period. These aren't the searches of someone being careful, someone deliberate, someone who Googled these terms with the clinical precision of a premeditated killer. These are the searches of someone typing fast, thinking faster, fingers outrunning spelling, urgency visible in every keystroke. The person behind those typos can't calmly be researching. She was scrambling, checking, and reassuring herself in the rawness of those misspellings displayed on a courtroom screen for everyone to see, strips away the composure she'd maintained for 4 years. This is the unedited version. The one she never intended anyone to read. And she had to watch 12 strangers absorb all of it. The verdict came in March 16th. Guilty on all counts. Aggravated murder. Aggravated attempted murder. Insurance fraud. Forgery. Unanimous. 3 hours. We think you're a piece of shit, Corey. Go back to the hell which you hath come from. Okay, that part wasn't part of the, you know, jury's response. But, you know, I'm thinking probably in their souls that's how they felt. 3 hours. In a case it took 3 weeks to present, the jury needed less than a business afternoon. They had a roundtable talk through the evidence and their reactions and arrived at the same conclusion without significant disagreement. Not a single holdout, not one juror who saw it her way. The narrative she'd built for 4 years, the book, the TV tour, the emails, the proclamations of innocence, the fictional novel, the messages about exposing the corrupt system, all of it weighed and dismissed. The time it takes to watch a movie. For anyone whose internal reality has been, I'm innocent, this is a persecution, and when the truth comes out, I'll be vindicated, the speed is the hardest thing. Not the word guilty, the 3 hours. Because it means she wasn't a hard question. She wasn't ambiguous. She wasn't even close. The story she'd been living inside since March 4th, 2022 was considered and discarded in a fraction of an afternoon. Laura, the juror, said Corey showed almost no reaction when the verdict was read, like a statue. That makes sense now. Not composure, not acceptance. A system that has no code for this input. The machinery that would generate tears, shock, anger, defiance, none of it running. Because processing the verdict would require acknowledging that the constructed reality is false. And that acknowledgement would collapse the self-destructive, the whole self-structure. So the system does the only thing it can, nothing. It freezes like the screen going dark when the processor overheats. But freezes are temporary. The processor cools down, the system restarts, and when it did, when Corey Richards was finally given a microphone and Control-Alt-Delete had been pressed enough times, restart! Oh, there it comes. Can everybody hear the Windows XP sound or Windows 95 booting up? Yeah, I don't quite know if she's that advanced. I'm thinking more like 3.1, just silence. The first time she'd been allowed to speak publicly since the trial began. Everything that had been compressed during those three silent weeks, everything the verdict had attempted to close, everything the psychological machinery had been storing behind the valve her attorneys installed, all of it came out. The reflex that had been firing uselessly for 3 weeks, generating defenses that had nowhere to go other than her notepad, producing stories that couldn't be delivered, finally had an outlet, and the pressure that had accumulated behind the silence didn't produce a measured statement or a plea for mercy. It produced a flood. For 45 minutes on what would have been her dead husband's 44th birthday, to an abundance, or rather to an audience that included three boys who'd asked the judge to put their mother away forever. The air left that room and hasn't come back. And that's next. Press subscribe so you don't miss the story of that cornucopia of chaos. Another inlet in the fractured brain of Corey Richens. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation there. And like I said, press subscribe so you don't miss the last part of our story on Corey Richens. The last story she'll ever tell. It's coming up next. Until then, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kids' legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Think about your mentors and idols, the people who inspire you most. While it may look like they have all the answers, they don't. But they do know when to ask questions and seek the support they need. In a world that glorifies hyper-independence, it's easy to forget that we're all better with a support system. Therapy is a great way to find a consistent source of support in your life, so you can break free from the outdated belief that seeking help is a sign of weakness. BetterHelp has experienced therapists ready to help you with challenges, ranging from anxiety and depression to relationships and stress. It's convenient, too. You can join a session with the click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life. And you deserve that. You can even send your therapist a message anytime something comes up. Build your support system with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles, gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube?
Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
It's 10:01 a.m. on a Monday, all at once. Your sales leader needs to know which deals are at risk. Your PM wants feature adoption by cohort, and your CFO needs one last graph for the board. Now your data team has to say no to somebody. Hex changes that. Ask any data question in plain English and get an analyst-grade response, all backed by your actual business context as defined by your data team. Start saying yes to more data questions at hex.ai.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe, made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.